Welcome to this podcast for Classical 91.5. I'm Julia Figueres. We got the gang back together again as your Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra is getting ready to record a new CD this week. So who do we have in the room? Well, we've got RPO Music Director Ward Stair.
Hi, Julia.
We have harpist Yolanda Kondonassis.
Hi.
And we've got composer Jennifer Higdon.
Hello.
And welcome, 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 welcome. It's so nice to have you back in our studios for a chat. Ward, let's just start with you and get a couple things out of the way. You've got a symphony, a whole show of American music, starting with you've got the Patrick Harlan Rapture, and you've got the Barber Symphony No. 1. The last time we heard Rapture, when you played it with the RPO, you paired it with the symphony that time too. Do they just sound good together? What's with that?
Well, I do think they sound good together. I also like the fact that Patrick's piece, it's about 8 minutes long, and it covers a huge range of emotions. I mean, the piece, if you'll remember, what was that, a couple seasons ago, I think, when we talked about it. But it's about this thing called rapture, which has nothing to do with religion, but it's about this feeling, this primal urge to escape that cavers experience. These are people who go way down into the bowels of the earth and are confined to, you know, very claustrophobic spaces, total darkness for sometimes weeks at a time, and you can imagine the psychological effects that that can have. And so Patrick was reading this book about these two rival caving teams who are competing to be the first to the deepest point in the earth, and I'm forgetting the title of that book off the top of my head right now, but it's a great book, and he was inspired to write this piece about not caving and not religion, but about this concept of extreme emotions. And I think he's done a really wonderful job of it in a very short, you know, in 8 minutes. He takes us on quite a journey. You get the feeling of the anticipation, the excitement at the outset of this voyage of discovery for these cavers. Then you get there's this little middle section where it's almost like I would imagine arriving at a stopping point where maybe there's a little bit more space and you can look around and see the, you know, the stalactites, stalagmites, all the things that maybe you're looking at for the first time that no one's maybe ever seen before. There's a sense of wonder and awe, and then the journey continues, and that's when the rapture starts to to kick in, and you really get this feeling of this churning of emotions, and there's a lot of repetition, but that's by design, and these themes just repeat and repeat until it becomes almost overwhelming, and then at the very end, I always tell the audience, we made it out of the cave alive, and it's a happy ending. But, you know, in 8 minutes, it goes on quite a journey. And I think it pairs up with the Barber well, because Barber's piece, his first symphony, is also very compact, but it's got a lot in it. I like to say that it's got all the drama and beauty and passion of a Mahler symphony in 21, 22 minutes. And so I like that. I think that Rapture complements the Barber well in that sense. I also think the musical languages, well, actually, I love this whole program because, you know, we're featuring American voices in composition, and there's such a great diversity. And I think if you look at all the pieces on the program, it highlights how amazing and varied our American musical voice and language is. And actually, we were talking, we have several generations of Curtis represented on this concert and on this recording, too. So I think it's a really great, great match all around.
The Barber piece was a huge hit. From day one, people loved that. From the day one, he was pretty well established when that was when it was first performed. It's kind of a romantic piece.
It is a romantic piece. Yeah, he was I think Toscanini premiered the Adagio, didn't he, for strings? I mean, he had some really huge breaks as a very young man in his career, and then, you know, later in his life, I think he was dealing with a lot of personal demons, so he wasn't able to sustain that arc. But we're still, when we come to the first symphony, we're still, I think, in that really fruitful period for Barber. And his music is, I've always loved Barber. He's one of my favorite composers. I think he got kind of unfair criticism for being too conservative and too romantic in his day, because, you know, he was kind of a victim of the times where people were doing all these crazy things.
Yeah, and they were rude about it.
And they were, and I think that hurt him, because I think he was a really sensitive person. I would have loved to have met him. But now, when we look back, it's funny how history kind of clarifies things.
Yeah, yeah. Who do we listen to now? We're not
That's
listening
right.
to those people who are saying those things now. We're listening
right.
to Barber.
Absolutely. And I think that when you look at his music now, it feels fresh and innovative to me. There aren't so many, you know, thorny moments as there are in some other pieces from that same era, but there's still a lot of innovation, especially with the form that he uses. Like I was mentioning, his economy of style and compositional technique is really amazing. And just the palette that he uses in most all of his music, but it's really on display in full, I think, in the First Symphony. Wide range of colors, wide range of emotions, beautiful solo. The oboe solo is just gorgeous. He really had a thing for oboes. He wrote so many wonderful oboe solos. You know, the violin concerto, there's one, and there's another one in this symphony, which is just magical.
And Eric Baer thanks you very, very much for programming this. Of course, right after that is another composer who has really stood the test of time well and whose music continues to sound fresh, Copland, with Agnes DeMille's music, Suite from Rodeo.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Rodeo or Rodeo?
You know, I've heard it both ways, and I think I even say it both ways. I don't have a preference.
Let's like, just take a vote. Jennifer, is it Rodeo or Rodeo?
You know, I think it's probably Rodeo. He's an American composer. You probably would have been thinking,
right?
Yes.
Rodeo.
and Yolanda, where are you going with this one?
Well, you know, I'm not sure I have a fully formed opinion on that, but I've just always heard it Rodeo. I guess what I refer to it
so
as.
So we're split down the middle here, and we'll have to have a tiebreaker sometime a little bit later on in this interview. So the music from Rodeo was written for Agnes DeMille, and it's just a good old cowboy. What can you say about it?
Well, it's one of those pieces that we all know very well. Of course, the hoedown, which is the last movement of it, has been used in beef commercials and all sorts of different applications. But no, the piece as a whole, I think, is really, it's a feel-good piece. I mean, it's about community. It's about coming together, both in, you know, large functions, town functions, and a more intimate one-on-one relationship. You know, you have the very beautiful Saturday Night Waltz, the Chorale Nocturne, which is much more kind of intimate voice and setting, and then you have the opening movement, which is just sort of, you know, festive and jubilant and townspeople getting together, and then, of course, the hoedown from Rodeo, the rodeo at the end of Rodeo. There we go. We get both of them.
Have been the tiebreaker right there.
Where it's just a big party and everyone's having a great time. So, but, you know, it captures, I think, that frontier spirit, which is something that, of course, Copland was well known for. And I think he was probably the first composer who was really able to tap into that aspect of our history here in America. So it's a nice, always a nice piece to include, especially in a program like this where we're looking at so many different aspects of the American sound.
We're just past the 100 for Leonard Bernstein, but the celebrations continue, and you chose Divertimento. I love this piece of music, and actually, as we celebrated his birth anniversary over the course of the week, I did select this to be one of the pieces to be played, and with, of course, Lenny conducting. But it's a great little funky piece.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of fun, lots of movement, and yeah, why'd you choose it?
Well, I've always been a fan of the piece, and it kind of it didn't get taken that seriously by people because it was, you know, sort of relegated to Pops programs. Not that I have anything against Pops programs, but I think people just thought, well, you know, this is lighter fare. And I suppose in a sense it is, because it's really fun. There are a lot of inside jokes, you know. But there are also really beautiful, elegant moments. The waltz is, I think, a masterpiece, you know, for the strings. It's so beautiful. He writes a waltz in 7/8 time, which is just, it's such a Bernstein thing to do, you know. But it's got a lilt, and you really can feel like you're dancing, even though you're in 7/8 time. It's extraordinary. The whole piece is based on, it was written for the Boston Symphony's, 100-year anniversary in 1980. And so he uses just B for Boston and C, the notes B and C for Centennial. And so you hear that throughout. And originally it was supposed to be a shorter work, and he says he had so many ideas that it just expanded into this 8-movement work. But it's only 15 minutes long, so each movement is very, very, very short. And there are a lot of inside jokes that he had with the musicians of the Boston Symphony, and some of which we'll never know, and some are more obvious, you know, like the big Beethoven quote in one of the movements. It's kind of funny. And then at the end, it's called BSO Forever, and it's a really over the top. I mean, there are four snare drum parts, big brass band. It's just like, you know, totally indulgent. But it's meant to harken back to some of Bernstein's early experiences as a kid, going with his parents to see the Boston Pops and Arthur Fiedler. And so it's really got that kind of summery vibe, festive vibe about it. And that was very much what he was going for. So I think it's a great piece. And I like it for our orchestra, too, because you have, you know, the waltz, like I said, is very, very beautiful, very elegant, very refined. You have, and then you have, like, the turkey trot, which is just funny, you know, and everything in between. And I think our orchestra, one of the things we're most proud of is how well we do so many different kinds of music. So, I mean, we do some of the best Pops concerts, I think, of any orchestra, and our musicians are so great at playing, you know, the heavy blues style that you also see, you know, in the Divertimento. That's one of the movements. Or, you know, or the big sort of band extravaganza like the BSO Forever. We're great at that. We're also great at the more, you know, polished, delicate music. So, I mean, the fact that our orchestra is so diverse, I thought it just fit well with the Divertimento, and it's a nice way for us to celebrate Bernstein, too.
Well, as you pointed out, we have a program that is simply packed with Curtis people, Bernstein, Barber, and of course the woman who's sitting right to my right, Jennifer Higdon. You teach there now, right?
I do, and when you're in those halls, you're ever aware of Barber and Bernstein, both, and it's such a legacy. It's hard not to be aware of those two.
Do you feel up to them?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure if anyone ever feels up to him.
That's a tough question.
It is a tough question. And I have to admit, when I saw the program, I thought, this is totally cool, because I think Copeland is how I came to classical music in the first place. I think my first encounters with him, I found the music so fascinating that I started backing up and learning the standard repertoire just because I was so inspired by Appalachian Spring. Obviously, the connection with the Copeland in a different way, I think, than Bernstein and Barber. But Copeland, for me, kind of represented American music, and then I got to know Bernstein and Barber through that. But ironically, I also have been a mentor for Patrick Harlan through the Cabrillo Festival when I did a residency there. He was one of the composers I selected to bring in and talk to about the business of music, and Marin Alsop conducted one of his works. So it's been fun to watch his career kind of evolve, and you probably weren't aware of that, but when I looked at the program, like, wow, this is
that's
an amazing program.
Small world. Yeah. That's great.
And I just lost my train of thought. But anyway, let's go back. So anyway, we have all of these Curtis people here. And we also have a concerto that got played once. Not that I got to see it because I wasn't in town, but I get to see it this time around. It is your harp concerto with Yolanda Kundinas is playing it. So Yolanda, you've taken this kind of on the road for a while. How's that been?
Oh, my goodness. When you play a piece, it's just a hugely beneficial function of internalizing it. And that performance here last May, you know, it's always, you know, I think Jennifer would probably agree, and Ward as well. You know, when you bring a new piece to the stage for the first time, it's wall to wall newness. You're trying to integrate everything around you and make it and fit in properly and make it work. And you know, I think we had a really good, successful premiere weekend, but I think these performances now are really going to show the benefits of having performed it with two additional orchestras since May, in addition to the RPO. And I think it's just that integration. As a musician now, you know, I've had the music for about 6 months, and you know that there's a lot of steeping that goes on. You know, it's just the best word I can think of. It just, you know, the brain absorbs and starts to formulate ideas and solutions to things that may not be apparent right out of the gate. And you know, it's always a really stimulating process to go through, and I think it challenges an artist or musician in ways that probably nothing else does. You know, I mean, I've for instance, played the Gina Stero Harp Concerto now over 200 times. And, you know, that piece just feels like it's been woven into the fiber of all my senses. You know, and I hope that this piece will, you know, be the same one day. But that challenge, that exercising of all your brain circuitry, I think is, it's, you know, you've got to embrace it because it's got to happen. And I think in the end, it's really good for your growth as an artist.
You've played with two other orchestras.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer, were you at all those performances?
No, actually, I was in Harrisburg, which I believe was a week or two after we were here.
A week,
here. Yeah.
It was 1 week.
So it was very quick, yeah. Which is almost like not any kind of a break. And then last week, it was in Louisiana,
Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge, mm-hmm. And I was not at that one. But it was fascinating for me because between the RPO and Harrisburg, I made a few changes and sent those over to Harrisburg. And then after the Harrisburg performances, I made more changes in the orchestration. We didn't really make that many changes in the part.
The harp part, there a lot
a
of
few register things.
Changes.
Yeah, change the register and certain. So maybe do something up an octave. I thought it would be a little bit clearer.
You made changes, but you don't. You haven't heard those changes. Your second set of changes till now.
Right.
Oh,
that's correct. Yeah.
Taking that on faith.
I know. And you hope that you have enough experience with orchestral writing that it will carry through what you imagined it will do. So, but I could tell from rehearsal that absolutely it all popped exactly where it was supposed to be. It's like breaking in a pair of shoes, isn't it? A new piece.
Blisters and all.
I know, exactly. And it's fascinating for me as a composer. I guess I'm lucky enough I get enough repeat performances with my pieces to actually experience the piece evolving in the hands of the orchestras. And even the orchestras that will do it down the road will play it better, believe it or not, because of the recording and because it's been done before. Something about that, it really, and hearing the orchestra in rehearsal yesterday was incredible.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I, you know, we obviously aren't, well, I'm not a musician, so we can't get a lot of technical when I ask this question.
Right.
But what changes did you make?
You know what? Most of the changes for me were actually changing dynamics in the orchestra and thinning a few things down so that the harpist wouldn't have to, like, try to push through the texture of the orchestra. A couple places where I boosted the orchestra by adding a few things, I changed the timpani. And usually what happens is I talk to the musicians. I did when I was here last. We had a lot of discussions about would this work better, would that work better. I marked up my score, and I went off. So when I walked in for the first rehearsal, I was able to check back in with those musicians and say, all right, how is it feeling now? And they could give me feedback. They said, this is good. You need to move this note. So I can actually tailor it for instrumentalists, their respective instruments, and sometimes it's small things like removing one note here or moving another note in another spot. So it's simple stuff. Amazingly very impactful, though.
Yolanda, so how is it doing now? How is it feeling?
It's feeling good, really good. Very settled and but still fresh. I think what I found was very helpful was last week in Baton Rouge. I was able to watch one rehearsal or part of one with just the orchestra playing. And that really helped me hear a lot of things that when you're kind of in the middle of the swirl of sound, it's you just make a lot of discoveries, voicing and you know, how your own sound can, you know, blend with things in a way that you don't necessarily come to when you're, you know, in the heat of battle. So I think just as Jennifer was saying, when I commissioned this work, for me, any whether solo or concerto that I commission, I make a gigantic effort to make sure it's recorded, because that does, it kind of assures a future for the piece. I think Jennifer, in our very first meeting, I was telling you that, there are a great many works written for the harp, an astounding number of pieces, concertos as well. I would wager to say probably hundreds But, you know, I have this vision in my mind when it comes to works written for the harp of, you know, that final scene of the first Indiana Jones movie, you know, after he's risked life, limb, soul, and heart to get this, you know, antiquity, then, you know, it's lifted up on the forklift in the, you know, some giant warehouse in a crate to gather dust. And, you know, I mean, bringing any new work to life, you do. It's, you know, blood, sweat, and tears. And then after a first performance, it's kind of, you know, unless some other brave soul chooses to dust it off and you know, do it again, that's kind of where it goes. But this one, just because it's commissioned by a consortium of orchestras, it's going to get very well played over the next year. And we'll have a recording then to support its further life, which I think, you know, I think it's just a necessity. You got to have that.
And this recording is in your hands. It's all up to you,
that's
Ward.
Right, Ward. We're counting on you to be Indiana Jones and
that's
rescue
right.
the music.
We want you wearing a hat.
Top men, right? Top that's men. Right. That's right. Scene.
Boots, the whole yeah. thing.
Not that I'm
Whip.
Putting any pressure. Ooh.
There we go.
Wait a minute. If this anyone, is going to
no,
go
no,
off
no,
the rails,
no, no,
everybody.
No.
Not that I'm putting any pressure on you, Ward, but... How does this feel now? Because what you were about to do is going to be the Jennifer Higdon Harp Concerto of Record.
Mm. That's true.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. No, it feels good. I mean, it's a big responsibility, but it's also an honor, I think, to make that first recording of a piece. And I've really enjoyed the process. We were just talking before we came into the studio about our rehearsal yesterday, and I think everyone, the orchestra, Yolanda, me, and I think even Jennifer in the hall, we all felt that there was, like, right off the bat, the piece was more settled, mm-hmm. you know? Because when you come back to a piece after it steeps for a while, I love that analogy, it just, you know, you have a better understanding of it after spending a little bit of time away from it. And, you know, I have been in touch with both Jennifer and Yolanda throughout this process of, you know, tweaking, revising. I remember checking in with Yolanda after her other two performances, which I wasn't able to hear either. But and we actually met in Cleveland a couple weeks ago just to go through it again with piano. So, you know, it's been an ongoing process for all of us, but it's been we've been, you know, very well integrated, I think. And so it feels like a team effort. I mean, I don't really feel, you know, like someone just dumped everything in my lap and said, okay, now it's all up to you. I mean, we're all working on it together. And the orchestra, as Jennifer was saying, has been an active participant in this whole process, too. So I've loved it. And, you know, I was thinking maybe this is a terrible analogy. So I've just, you know, as you were asking about the technical, like what we did to change it and what's different, I was trying to think how you could try to describe it. And like lighting came up in photography, you know, mm-hmm. and which is like you can have this amazing subject that's being photographed and maybe an amazing setting and you do it and it's great. And then you decide, well, I'm just going to tweak the lighting a little bit. And you know mm-hmm. that, you know, not much has changed, but you know, sometimes it's just a, you know, in our case, a dynamic here or there or a register shift for Yolanda here or there, meaning higher or lower. And then that makes it just boom, makes it mm-hmm. pop. And so if you think about, you know, trying to take a selfie with your friends or something and, you know, the lighting's not good and then you just make a little tweak and then, whoa, it's even better. It's awesome, you know. That's, I don't know, maybe that's a terrible analogy, but
you
it's,
know
you know.
I think the room has agreed that was a good analogy.
Perfect. Yeah, okay,
yes.
All right.
Yeah. Excellent.
We're gonna run with that.
We're going to go with it, okay.
Yeah, we're going to go with
it. All right, I like it.
What else is on the CD? I assume Rapture is going to be?
Rapture is going to be on it. And of course, that'll also be, I think, the first commercial recording for Rapture, which is nice.
Patrick must be. Just yeah. so thrilled.
He's happy about it. And we've been going through similar little tweaks with his mm-hmm. piece as well. And his piece is a little older. It's been around for a couple more years. So it's been to more places and he's had a little more time to revise it. But he still made some little tweaks, adjusted the lighting a little bit, so to speak, in it. And the Barber is going to be the other piece on the recording. So
nice CD.
Yeah,
I think
it's
kind of three
be good.
Generations mm-hmm. almost.
Yeah,
very
really.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And at least two thirds of that is Curtis.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's so, it's cool. It's just the, you know what, when it's also nice to be able to share this orchestra and Ward and Yolanda's gift with the outside world, because I know the radio airplay, there's quite a bit when you've got something there, you can say, oh, I feel like listening to this. Mm-hmm. So you're also sharing the orchestra.
Mm-hmm. So you did not see the Baton Rouge, and you did see the first. Was there a moment where you looked at what was happening up on that stage and said, what has Yolanda done?
Actually, you know, for me, a piece, even if it's a concerto, is a giant mosaic, and it's all the pieces that go in. So it's Yolanda, but it's also all of the musicians. And in my music, because there are intricate layers that interlock with each other, I listened to how those things interlock, and it clicked immediately. That was the thing that was really interesting, is the minute it launched, it was there and it had its groove. And normally with newer pieces, it takes a little while to find the right groove in each one of the movements. But in the case of the first rehearsal, it was there. And so I'm like a little kid gleefully kind of jumping up and down out in the audience where I get to sit. And I know the musicians kept looking out at me, and I was like smiling big and like, yeah, this is good. This is fun.
I know that when we first talked, you talked about really wanting to give Yolanda a groove.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, I like a groove. I feel like, I was thinking yesterday I did an interview, the gentleman asked me, what did you ask Jennifer to do with this concerto? Did you have any, you know, guidelines or whatnot? And, you know, I would not presume to give her guidelines, but I did, you know, actually, Jennifer, I think you asked me.
That's
What would I like?
And what do you want in your concerto? Yeah. You can actually special order that. It's just like a breakfast sandwich.
And I actually did say, you know, I think this is also maybe just a function of the kind of player I am. Not every harpist would have the same wish list. But I love music where I can, you know, you can be just a tiny little bit of a, you know, a rock star once in a while and get in a groove and not have everything so walking on eggshells, and, you know, to really be able to lay into something and find that rhythm and flow.
She literally said that. I literally wrote it down in the notebook. A lot of the things you said, because we met at Curtis at one point, you came in to Philly, and then we'd talk on the phone. And I remember calling you on the phone and say, well, what is it about the genus there that you like? Tell me, express to me in words. And you mentioned groove, and that immediately stuck in my head. I thought, oh, that's an interesting idea. I'd not really approached writing a piece in terms of creating a groove. So just a single word from the soloist, it's amazing how that will inspire like a lot of activity on the manuscript page.
Yeah. And I also asked her to, you know, I just think, I think I mentioned that the conversational writing is usually more successful with a harp than big, thick, integrated texture. And, you know, part of that is, you know, can be playful, you know, dialogue, but also it's important for an audience to just hear the harp by itself sometimes, which I think you, you know, you did beautifully. The whole piece starts with the harp alone. And, you know, when we were talking about Copland earlier, I was thinking to myself how this piece begins with just a series of moving open fifths, which is very
Copland-inspired.
Copland-esque. Yeah, and very, you know, you just kind of see, it's different. It doesn't sound like, you know,
it's very American
Copland
sounding, I think.
Redo,
yeah, right.
But it is in a very, you know, you feel that wideness of the landscape right at the beginning. But it, I mean, I've characterized it in interviews, and I still feel this way. It was an initial impression that's really stuck for me that the piece opens in an extremely kind of a spiritual way, almost. It's called First Light, and it is very evocative of being present for a sunrise. And, you know, and all that metaphor kind of suggests. And what I love is that, you know, for me, as an artist, I would say, as much as I love a good groove, I think my other love when performing is to be able to share an introspective moment with a giant group of people, to try and attempt at least to make a giant space feel small and kind of create a collective experience for everyone, kind of in other words, sort of get everybody on the same page. And whenever I give a recital, no matter what kind of a different recital program, a solo recital I'm doing, I always try, at least, unless I've got, you know, specific guidelines, I start with the same Scarlatti sonata, which is like, it's like my prayer. It's like my coming into the space, and let's all, it's an andante, it's not an adagio, but I try and gather us all around the same set of sounds and the same language and the same kind of set of goals for the evening. And that's what Jennifer's piece allows me to do. And I'd have to say it's the very first concerto orchestral work that I've ever had that luxury to start that way. And, you know, like I say, try and at least attempt to make a big space small.
So let's talk a little bit about the reactions, because I'm sure this has seen a few reviews. You've heard a few comments. So what was your favorite comment that you've heard about this? And I'll ask each of you, what was your favorite comment that you've heard about this, Jennifer?
Actually, I think my favorite were people are like, when can we buy that? It's a good sign when the harpists are getting so excited. Yeah. I like, well, we're getting it all tweaked up now. Just hold on. We got to make the car perfect, you know.
Yolanda?
Well, you know, I just think that there's an appetite for good harp repertoire. So I think just as you said, Jennifer, it you know, interest in the piece kind of says it all. And we got a lovely review here in Rochester after the world premiere performances. You know, it's in at least thus far. I believe
it's
that's
been good so far. So good.
Yeah, it's okay. Been very good.
Oh, okay, yeah. In Harrisburg. Okay, in Baton Rouge.
Well, you know what? Harrisburg doesn't have a music
they
critic.
They don't have a music critic. No. I seem like I saw a couple of blog entries of people who were at the concerts. They were pretty full concerts. So yeah, it's, and I definitely got a lot of emails from people who heard, people who traveled from Philadelphia, who drove to Harrisburg to hear it, and a couple of people who drove from out of state to hear it. Amazingly, I was surprised. Even here, when we had the concert here, I was surprised how many people had flown in from great distances to hear the concertos. So.
It's you and you. You two are magnets.
Well, we do our best.
You have fans. and people like this. When they wrote you, they were pleased with what they heard?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were excited. They were very excited. They were asking questions about the lullaby movement. They're like, is that going to be a separate piece? Sometimes they think about pulling. I just finished pulling out the slow movement on my tuba concerto because so many people said, I'd like my students to be able to do that with piano. This has been and it was one of the ideas I had with the lullaby. I thought, well, if Yolanda has students who want to do it on a recital, it's with individual players. So they could actually put that together without needing an entire orchestra.
Right.
So I think about that because I guess maybe being around enough schools, I see how kids struggle to find repertoire that they can do by living composers on their recitals.
And Ward, what kind of response have you heard from the base of the RPO, your RPO listeners?
The bass section, well, they don't talk a lot, but they're, you know.
I had this feeling I was just going to get that answer.
He teed him up.
I knew.
He took it.
He ran with that.
That was a softball. No, I have to say, I was sitting here thinking about what my response to that question would be. It's a good question, but I have to say the best reactions that I've had are more just feelings. You know, like when... You can tell I've done enough new music where, you know, when you go through it the first time, you can feel if an orchestra is into it or not, you know. And orchestras, there's this, like, this extra sense that, you know, they have where, you know, they kind of can sniff out whether a piece is good or not right away. And
it's a sense of the force.
Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, it's, you know, yeah. It's hard to describe.
Whether it's phony or real.
Right, right. Yeah. They have a feel right away for the authenticity of it and for the, you know, just the quality of it. You know, they understand that when we're creating a piece anew, it takes some work and you have to sort of, you know, figure it out, which is actually a very stimulating process for us. But that initial gut reaction to it is important, I think. And I felt right away just great vibes coming from our orchestra. And then, you know, to work with a composer in that process is a real treat. And, you know, to turn around, you know, back in the spring and also this week and see a smile on
that?
Jennifer's
yeah.
face is a great feeling. And then, you know, I remember in the world premiere performances we did, feeling the audience being really engaged, especially in those quieter moments, you know, that Yolanda was talking about. It's really, I mean, those are the biggest payoffs for me.
They were still. That's always a real, you can tell immediately if you've gotten the audience because it's very still and you don't hear any movement because they're not breathing.
Right.
They're hanging on every note.
You know, I would say, you know, as well, having done an awful lot of contemporary music in my life, that my gauge of not only staying power, but true authenticity, as you were saying, and potential of a piece is a pretty, there's one very practical way that I gauge it, and that is if you practice it and work very hard, it gets better. which may sound
That's a good measurement.
You know, because quite honestly, there are pieces that just, you know, it's sort of like the universe is not on their side, where, you know, an orchestra can rehearse it and rehearse it and rehearse it, or a solo artist can just practice it till they are blue in the face, and it just, it never gets better. It never, you know, that gelling process never finds its spot.
It has no room to grow.
In the atmosphere, And, you know, but this, I think every time I practice it, every time I've rehearsed it, it gets better.
And that sounds good to me.
And that's I think, a pretty good gauge.
Isn't it funny how we have to gauge these things instinctively, though? I mean, I think about when I'm writing, but I don't know how to define what that is. I only know what it feels like. And maybe because I've also performed and had plenty of works that I spent hours and hours and hours every day practicing and then went back the next day. And
Feels like you never saw it before.
I know. It's like you've not touched it. And you're like, so I think about that when I'm writing, even like the little lines that will interact with the harp. I'm always saying, is this line interesting? Is there something I can do to make it more interesting for the performer? So if you're doing that and you're trying to build it into every line and really kind of go by a gut instinct, I find that kind of leads you well, even though it's an impossible thing to describe. I mean, we've all kind of given, like, it just feels right, you know? But you know it when you actually hear it. And when you play it, you also know it. And I can tell it by watching the audience. The best composition lesson in the world is watching the audience. You can tell when you've lost them. And you can tell when they're completely engaged in the experience. It's a really obvious difference.
I look forward to having a fully engaged audience tomorrow night and Saturday as well. And we won't cough.
No
I promise we won't cough.
Bring your cough drops.
Oh, please, or leave the room.
Turn off your phones. That's right.
Thanks very much for being here, and good luck on the recording. It takes how long?
Takes how long? What do you mean?
Before you record it to when we can actually buy this?
When it's out there, yeah.
Next year, for
That's
sure.
That's a good question. 19. I don't know when the release is planned, but there's definitely, you know, few months at a minimum of time that go that
probably
the engineers
spring
have
at
to
earliest,
put everything together.
Maybe summer.
Yeah. Our guests today have been Yolanda Kononassis. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, a pleasure. Jennifer Higdon, thanks for coming back in.
It's a joy.
And Ward Stair, good to have you here. And you know what? I have an idea. When the CD comes out, let's all come back and talk about it again.
Well, that sounds good.
I love it.
Sounds good.
But you'll have to dress up as Indiana Jones.
He will come with his hat and his whip.
That's right.
Yeah. If you'd like some information about the RPO season, you can go to rpo.org. I'm Julia Figueres. This podcast is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.